Welcome back. Let's Get Physical Therapy is an educational podcast brought to you by MedStar Health and hosted by me, physical therapist Becca Schumer. I will be sharing the mic with tons of healthcare professionals with the goal of educating and inspiring fellow PTs and future PTs. We hope you find this both informative and inspirational, ultimately optimizing how we treat our patients and grow as professionals. Please enjoy today's episode. Today on the podcast, we're joined by physical therapist Renee Lawson. She graduated from the Washington University in St. Louis with a BS in PT and earned her PRPC from the Herman Wallace Pelvic Rehab Institute. She's worked with severely profoundly handicapped children for about 5 years at the Hospital for Sick Children in Washington, D.C., and then in the Anne Arundel County Public Schools. Renee worked for about a year at the Washington Hospital Center in inpatient acute care and worked for about 4 years in home health. She also worked in private orthopedic practice in downtown D.C., but has almost 26 years with NRH at K Street doing orthopedics, then orthopedics and breast cancer rehab, and now doing mostly pelvic floor therapy for men and women. As part of Physical Therapy Month, I really wanted to use this platform to bring awareness to as many of the areas of PT as I could, and I feel like pelvic health is just one that a lot of people don't know much about and know what there is to offer. So I'm happy to bring on Renee to learn more about this topic with you. Renee Lawson, welcome to the podcast. How are you today?
Beck, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Absolutely. I'm stoked. It's October, which is PT month. So we are sharing, we're sharing all sorts of PT things this month. So I had to get you on to talk about pelvic health because I feel like that's an area that's not tapped into enough. So I want to pick your brain and learn all about it.
Happy to help. I mean, and that was it's something most people don't think of as being anything to do with physical therapy. So makes it so interesting because they go, I didn't know this was anybody could do anything about this.
Mm-hmm. Let's shed some light on it. But first, I would love to hear how you got into the field.
Okay, so being old, I have a long history of various specialties, starting out in pediatrics and moving forward into acute care and home health and orthopedics and breast cancer rehab. And then we lost one or two pelvic floor therapists who were licensed in DC, and the urogynecologist had no one to refer to. So at that time, under the umbrella of the APTA, women's health, pelvic floor physical therapy, and breast cancer rehab were under the same umbrella. So when we lost our two therapists, I got approached by saying, Renee, surely you'd like to do pelvic rehab because, you know, you're in women's health. And I went, no. But eventually, and after many requests, I talked to my colleagues who had gone into it, and they said it was the most rewarding work they'd ever done. And at that time, I was getting into my 50s and looking at how I would have spent the rest of my career. So I gave it a shot. And it was daunting at first because it's not something that you normally do. You sit in a room with 29 of your newest best friends, and you're about to look at each other's lady parts. And by the end of the weekend, you're dropping your pants for everybody. And I've never looked back. It's been great.
If you were in the elevator, you got to give your elevator pitch on someone that knows nothing about women's health or pelvic health with PT. What would you say it is? What does it encompass?
It encompasses pretty much anything to do with the pelvic muscles, urinary incontinence, which most people can relate to, pain with sex, constipation issues. Those are the three biggies.
Mm-hmm. Can we go a little more into each of those, like what kinds of patients you're seeing in the clinic? I know you said those are the three most common, but can you dive into those a little more and tell us a little more about those issues and how PT might be beneficial for those?
Sure. For urinary incontinence, that's any leakage, any urinary leakage. That's your pregnant folks. It's it can be athletes, you know, who are leaking as they're doing lifting. You've got your postmenopausal ladies, and you have once you've had a baby, everybody's postpartum. And as we start to lose estrogen or we get older and we're have more babies, and there's prolapse issues, which we also deal with, those are the kinds of people who will walk in. In terms of constipation, again, you don't realize that a tight pelvic floor, poor diet, pooping the wrong way, people, as they're straining, are actually tightening and making things harder and more difficult. So there's a whole thing to do with that. So there's strengthening and relaxation, and realizing that they often go together. you have to work with that. From a pelvic pain standpoint, pain with sex, both men and women. It can be due to birth control use, which nobody realizes. The use of oral birth control can cause very, very big vaginal changes, causing pain with sex. It may not happen for a few years. Some people are born with this, having pain with sex. They've never been able to use a tampon. They just figured it was their fault. And again, postmenopausal, loss of estrogen, all that kind of stuff, and just tight pelvic floors that can occur for a variety of reasons. The effect of stress, that happens a lot with men. And pain with ejaculation, tight pelvic floors can deal with that. So, I mean, it's just a whole wide range of folks that it affects.
Mm-hmm. And where are the patients, where are they coming from? Are they word of mouth? Is it?
Beck, huh? They're coming from everywhere. I used to know all my referrers. They were usually urogynecologists or nurse practitioners or PAs who were specialists in the field. And I have doctors' names I've never met before. They're usually PCPs. And actually, I think it's the patients who are doing the research. Mm. And they're finding out that there's a solution to a problem that they didn't realize. And no one told them there was a solution. And so they're doing their own research and they get on the internet and they look out and they get in where they can. There's not a whole lot of us out there. So there's a wait list everywhere you go.
Yeah, that's a great question for patients seeking help for this. What are some things that they should look for in a provider to make sure they're going to the right place?
Good question. There are certification, you don't have to be certified, but there are training programs out there. APTA has a marvelous range of pelvic floor courses leading to certification. The Herman Wallace Pelvic Rehab Institute, similar. And you can pretty much dive into so many different areas. Alcove Education now is starting to offer courses. Well, not starting, they've been doing it and getting really good speakers. You also have to travel. You know, it's not to wait for something to come to you is going to be tough. Mm-hmm. But those three organizations, as far as I know, do pretty much the lion's share of all the training. So you want to find out, you make sure it's not someone, you want someone who can do internal work, I believe. There's a lot that can be done externally. I believe internal work is important. What's coming up and big, which I have not done, and it's to my detriment, is dry needling. Dry needling of the pelvic floor has become, it's amazing what it can do. Mm. Unfortunately, we just lost a therapist who decided to move to Leesburg, and it was just a bit more of a commute than she was willing to do, but she was trained in dry needling of the pelvic floor, and the changes she can make was just startling. So these are different things you can look for.
Yeah. When a patient comes to you, and I'd imagine they're a little nervous, they don't know really what to expect. How do you have that first conversation about what the evaluation is going to entail? And how do you move forward with that?
I guess I don't go into too much detail. I just ask them why they're there. And I get their history. And now we have our form, our evaluation, which is different than the orthopedic handout, a little more detailed, a little more questions that you guys don't see on your forms. But I think the important thing, the feedback I've gotten from my patients, is that I make it matter of fact. These are the same things I would ask, how often do you brush your teeth? Da, da, da. Do you have pain with sex? What happens when you masturbate? What happens if you have, do you have orgasm? Does it hurt? Talking about peeing and pooping, and let's take a look at the fiber, at the stool chart, and then show me what your poop looks like. We just make it the way it should be. It's health. Make it as matter of fact. And they end up getting more and more comfortable. When it comes to the assessment, therapists have different views. Some people start with the orthopedic spine posture. I tend to try to get to the internal because that's what I'm looking for. If they're uncomfortable with that, we go a different direction. I let patients know that they're in control. If there's something they don't like to do, we're not going to do it. Or work around it. We'll figure it out. So by the end, they come in and they are very nervous. And, I do it every day or all my work days. So I forget sometimes. And then they mention how nervous they are. And by the end, they're going, oh, I should never have been this nervous. It's pretty cool.
This is not something we discussed, but what came to my mind as you're talking, and this is very personal thing that you're doing. How do you work with people who have experienced trauma and doing an exam like that? Are there any like flags or things you're looking out for to address that? Is that something that's talked about?
Well, definitely there's an abuse question on the questionnaire. Sometimes they answer honestly, sometimes they don't. Often there's a hesitation. I can tell there's something they're not telling me. And I always say, look, anything, you know, if you're not comfortable, let me know. And then, you know, later on, maybe sessions down the road, I'll hear about a story. Sometimes people are really reluctant to be touched anywhere. And, you know, and I will often either refer them back to their doctor or talk about counseling and, you know, just say, it's not for you at this time,
mm-hmm.
but we talk about it, you know, and it's just, sometimes they want to push through it and that's probably not the right thing to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Very sensitive topic, but very,
so it is.
No,
but
and relatable to this. Yeah.
It's very pertinent. And, you know, I think there's a lot more out there that maybe they're not telling me, or mm-hmm. maybe they've resolved and they're just decided to move forward with.
Mm-hmm. What about prehab? Someone you've worked with a patient prior, they're going to have a baby, they're pregnant, they want to just do a little prehab to hopefully minimize what happens after they have a baby, be it C-section or normal course. What kinds of things are you doing with the patient? Sort of, are you doing this prehab, prepartum, I guess?
If they've had pelvic floor issues before, we take a look at that pelvic floor, because a tight pelvic floor can sometimes lead to higher potential for tearing.
Hmm.
I haven't done a whole lot in labor and delivery, quite honestly, but a lot of other therapists have. And they can coach, they can talk about positioning, and the training I got didn't talk about that. It probably does now if I were to go back and retake those courses. Not my strong suit, but I know there are other therapists out there who love that part of it. That's what they do. And I mean, basically getting, you know, letting their patients know to keep doing what they're doing. If they're exercising, keep moving. Breath control. Everyone gets taught breath control. Every single person gets taught breath control.
Mm-hmm.
So many people haven't a clue. So especially if you're for delivery, you kind of want to know how good breath control is. So pretty much it's more if someone has come to me with pelvic floor dysfunction before or has it, that we'll talk about. We'll work on getting that pelvic floor in as good a shape as we can mm-hmm. prior to delivery.
I took the pregnancy and postpartum course with the Institute of Clinical Excellence. It was an amazing course. And for pregnancy, for the athlete getting back to sport or whatever, it was very informative, a great course to anyone okay. who has a baby should have PT afterwards.
Yeah, we're probably about the only country in the world that doesn't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Unbelievable.
It's crazy.
So if you're pregnant, you've had a baby, please go get PT.
Right.
If you're listening to this. How do you educate patients? We talked a little bit about pain and pain experience, and this area is a little different than other areas. Can you tell me a little bit about that and how you educate patients on pain and what is okay and what's not okay?
You mean during treatment?
Mm-hmm.
I really feel this part of the body is different. You know, if you had a bad neck or bad back, you know, go to massage therapist, you go to physical therapist. They can kind of dig in on those trigger points. You know, elbows get used. This gets stretched. When it comes to the pelvic floor area, I usually cue patients not to let their pain exceed a 3. Comfortably uncomfortable is kind of where we go. You know, trigger point release is very gentle. You don't want, there's already a strong connection between the brain and the pelvic floor. So, or pain and sex. So you don't want to keep going down that pathway, that neural pathway. You want to try to retrain that. So trying to stay away from pain per se like that is important. So it's a much more gentle treatment than any, I mean, it's still striated muscle stuff, but I go much more gently.
Mm-hmm. It seems like this population, and correct me if I'm wrong, but these types of issues, they may have been told you're being too sensitive, like you're thinking too much about it. And that just creates this vicious cycle, this pain cycle that's really hard to break.
Oh, yeah. It's your fault. You know,
yeah.
If you're having pain, it's your fault. You're neurotic. You're too anxious. You're it's something you're doing wrong when it's a medical condition and it needs to be treated. And it's a team. I can't do this without a really responsive doctor who can help with, obviously, with the official diagnosis, but there's Valium suppository sometimes. There's different things to try. There's Botox injections. There's trigger point injections. There's, I mean, basically it's three legs of a stool. The hardest leg to get patients to go to is a sex therapy part, to get someone to work through, because they're already seeing a doctor, they're seeing me, and to see another therapist when they're probably already seeing a different therapist is a lot to ask with from a time standpoint and a financial standpoint, but it really would be helpful. So this is a team effort. You know, there are really three legs to that stool.
Going back to just the person in front of you, obviously you're going to treat the pelvic floor, but just like any other issue that we treat, we're not just focusing on the thing in front of us. We look above and below. How do you incorporate that when you're working with someone with a pelvic floor issue?
You've got to check things, check out the abdominals, the hip girdle, the hip girdle area, the range of motion, the pelvic alignment, getting them strong. Most people are actually in their own gym programs, but like if they have a really bad pelvic floor, I'll often steer them away from like a heavy duty Pilates or bar class because of the connection between the pelvic floor and the abdominals, and going more towards yoga and stretching and different kinds of core approaches. But yeah, you do, you know, going down to the feet, you kind of have to look at everything. It's got to keep your eyes open. And sometimes you can get tunnel vision. You know, you get really honed in on a body part and you have to remember to keep looking at it and going around and going, what else could be the driver? Because sometimes the driver is not as obvious as you think it is.
Do you take students?
Not officially. Like I don't have someone with me for like a whole thing, but the students who come to the clinic, they will often shadow me for a day.
And yeah, that's, I was curious how they would, what their interest level would be with that, how that goes.
I know some, like the students say some other people actually go for a full fill in pelvic floor. I'm not interested in doing that, but I love having the students come in and shadow me. And actually I'm having some therapists in the network come and shadow me for a day. You know, they're new, like when I took my course, I came back and literally started like fill out my schedule. I didn't have anyone to ask questions of or anything like that. So this is kind of nice that they can come and watch and we can talk and figure things out. And I actually had a student, one of our students come with me last week, and she was great. She was actually an athletic trainer before she decided to go to PT school. And she has some wonderful things to add. It was like, cool. You know, it's always great to have the pair of eyes in there.
If you have a clinician, say there's a clinician in the network and they're interested in getting involved, obviously shadowing, but where else is a good place just to get some basic knowledge and get your feet wet with this patient population?
I wouldn't even know how to answer that. I'm not even sure where to go with that. I just jumped in. So, and what's interesting is when you just jump in, you still know more than the person in front of you. And you still have answers to questions that they had no idea of. But shadowing, I think, I mean, and obviously coursework. I mean, pretty much all my coursework is pelvic floor based. So just keep taking courses.
What about modalities? How much are you using modalities for this patient population?
Minimal.
Like stim and biofeedback, that kind of stuff.
So biofeedback, I do on an as-needed basis. It's not a big thing of it. Often my finger is the biofeedback device. But there are biofeedback devices, especially if they're really not sure what's happening there. And there are two of them out there, the LV and the PeriFit, and that they have games basically, and they can see what you're doing. And like the PeriFit tells you if you're cheating and using the wrong muscles. So I might introduce it to the clinic. In the clinic, we might just try something using external sensors. And if there's a candidate and it's appropriate, I have them just take it home.
Okay.
You know, they order it for home. And for eSTIM, kind of the same thing. We'll do a trial of eSTIM in the clinic, but it's for training for patients who really have a hard time isolating the pelvic floor. There's a lot of weakness there, maybe some nerve damage. A little bit. I mean, you're just trying to activate those muscles. And again, we'll order one for rental in a few months, but so it's minimal. And again, the only other modality, for those who do it, with the dry needling and the stim there.
For patients that you're treating and you're giving them some exercises, what are some common deviations or exercises that people do, quote unquote, wrong, that you're often cueing them to fix if they're having these pelvic floor issues? Are there any common ones?
Truly, it's how do you tighten and relax your pelvic floor? I mean, everything else, you know, your typical, you know, hip exercises, bridging, there's really the same deviations you would see in the clinic for anybody else. Mm-hmm. But trying to access a muscle group that you can't see and have a hard time feeling. And the accessory muscle use is extraordinary. You know, between the stomachs and the glutes and the adductors and the breath holding, that's pretty much what you're seeing a lot of. Mm-hmm. But everything else is the same as that you would see orthopedically.
Gotcha. Are they using any ultrasound?
No. Okay. So not as a modality. I don't use ultrasound as a treatment. Mm-hmm. There is real-time ultrasound, which I'm sure will never be in our budget. But
I might edit that out. No, I'm just kidding.
But real-time ultrasound is very valuable as a biofeedback device, both for the pelvic floor, looking at diastasis recti abdominis, you know, a DRA, a separation after pregnancy. You can see where the linea alba is, whether it's a good tone or whether there's really laxity, and then the patient can really see that. And oh, gee, if they tighten it this way, look how the fibers now align. Same thing with the pelvic floor. Real-time ultrasound is probably one of the best forms of biofeedback out there, and mm-hmm. patients can see it. They kind of get it so fast.
When we were first talking about this topic, you were just exuding with how people are so appreciative of what you do. So if you had to plug pelvic health, this is PT month once again, how would you plug it and get people more interested in this topic? Like, why is this so important to you and how does this impact you and why do you keep doing this?
It has impacted so many people on so many levels. Your pelvic floor is part of, especially as a woman, and men and women, but especially majority of women, it's part of your identity. It's part of who you are, what you do, how you see yourself. And when it's not working right, it affects every aspect of your life. It affects your physical functions, it affects your dating, it affects your personal relationships. And as a pelvic floor therapist, you can make a difference with that. You can totally change someone's outlook, get them back in the dating scene. Or I had way back when I was working at Leisure World and I got someone who had fecal incontinence and her son wanted her to travel and she wasn't about to leave the compound. And I got her to travel to Brussels very happily and basically opened her life up again. So the changes you make are dramatic and far reaching and it's just incredibly valuable.
Anything else as we start to wrap up on anything we didn't talk about that you wanted to talk about or you feel is important to share with PTs, PT students, anyone listening to this podcast?
I just say for whatever your specialty is, ask the questions. Ask the questions about continence. Ask the questions, you know, if they have any, even about sex, just to let them know, you know, if they have a problem, you know, and it may be part of their issue with their spine or whatever that, you know, and then we can refer them out. But I would love for all the specialties to have the same questionnaire to a degree that we have. Just to cover it, they don't have to treat it, but you can't treat it if you don't bring it up. And if people, you don't bring it up, people don't know that it's something that is treatable, especially incontinence. They just think, oh, I'm getting older. It's just part of getting older. So I would ask everybody to just do that as part of their intake, you know, that part of their eval.
Perfect. We love to wrap up. We used to actually ask favorite quote, but we're going to switch it up for PT month. And we're going to start asking what your biggest accomplishment is inside of work and outside of work.
I mean, inside of work, that's big. I mean, making this field, helping people, helping babies into the world. No one's named a baby after me yet, but I can claim babies. It's just opened my world. I mean, it just helps me look at people differently and with open arms and I don't know. I'm you got me.
Speechless. Appreciate you coming on. I can tell your energy, how excited you are to help this patient population and to spread the word about pelvic health to the PT world and get more people involved. You never know who's going to listen to this and be like, hey, maybe I can do that. And I'm going to be calling you.
Or people listen and they're going to reach out for help, because just because you're a therapist doesn't mean you don't have an issue.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of, where can people find you? Where are you treating out of? Not that you have time for more patients, but if you did, or someone wants to shadow you, where can people find you?
I'm at the K Street site, downtown DC. Okay. But we do have other therapists throughout the network in Maryland and Virginia. So we're out there, and, you know, up in Baltimore. Yeah, we're all around. We just need more of us.
There you go. Thank you so much for your time, Renee. It's been great.
Thanks, Beck. I'm glad this worked out.
Yes, we did it.
Yay.
Thanks for listening to the Let's Get Physical Therapy podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Instagram at MedStarHealthPT. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please give us a 5-star rating and leave a review so we can reach more listeners just like you. As always, we appreciate your time and hope you join us for our next episode.